Fair warning, the following contains disturbing sexual imagery and criminality. The names and identifying information of the perpetrator of these crimes and of victims have been changed to protect all concerned. Everyone listening should proceed with a thoughtful consideration of utmost caution. These are real crimes committed by real people. Sexual criminality is the dimension beyond the comprehension of the common man. It is a dimension as near as the boy next door and as personal as your own anatomy and belief system. Sexual criminality claims the flatlands somewhere between normal sex drives and disabling mental illness. Our own understanding of sexual criminality usually falls into simple-minded moral diagnoses and breathtaking ignorance of this most personal part of who we are. This is a part of ourselves we meet only with loathing and fear, believing we understand it. We are mistaken in this understanding. This is Sex Crime Central. His name, Rod Baines. His occupation, top mechanic in the professional race car circuit. The time, we join Mr. Baines in the middle of a lap around the speedway that he calls his life. We see now the white flag indicating it's the last lap of the most catastrophic race of his life. Before Mr. Baines begins that last lap, he makes an unexpected pit stop in Sex Crime Central. At present, exhausted from the full-throttle lifestyle he's led in his business of making fast cars even faster, Rod Baines collapsed into his easy chair for a long day wrenching on the cars that he loved more than anything else. The 45-year-old's face evokes memories of actor Steve McQueen, reincarnated from the late 1960s. His good looks and his skill working among the nation's top pit crews ensured that he never had a shortage of ladies around him. What his blonde hair and blue eyes had never secured was the sort of loving relationship that really worked, the kind of family that he'd always wanted. Not that he hadn't tried. He had tried once, and in 15 years of trying, he spent 14 of those years knowing he would never be more than a meal ticket to a woman who lived in the fantasy that she could have done better. The fresh ink on their divorce papers merely memorialized what had been true for far too long for the both of them. But tonight, his life and his depression were to get a lift from an unexpected traveler he met at a place not of his own choosing, a place known as Sex Crime Central. Rod Baines may have looked every bit the modern version of Steve McQueen, but he hadn't been feeling very Hollywood at all recently. He had just come off a failed marriage that was, for him, only the most painful failure in a life that had seen few checkered flags bringing him over the finish line. His children were underwhelmed by his hard-fought efforts to preserve his family, and he was as isolated in his travel trailer as he'd ever been in his lonely life with his family. There was no consolation prize. There was only the comfort that he could invent, or perhaps find, on his own. But just recently, an attractive young woman had come into his life. Like all the other women he'd ever felt safe enough to approach, she too was one of the proverbial damsels in distress in which he seemed to specialize. Not that he was looking to take advantage. Rod was just one of those men with a low sense of his own worth, and women who were accomplished, self-sufficient, and goal-oriented, well, they wouldn't need him at all, and because they wouldn't ever need him, they could never love him. Or at least that's what he thought. Mr. Baines' imagination was limited to the extent that he simply couldn't conceive of the possibility that any woman could or would seek him out and want him simply for the pleasure of his company. He knew that he had to earn love, or it would simply never be given. One night, just like all the others in which he had found himself all alone, his phone rang. Baines looked at the number and smiled. She was only 17, but she had been talking to the older man a lot more than he'd ever expected her to. It wasn't that she wasn't needy. She was. As she had become older, her ineptitude with life mirrored that of her utterly inept family. From their many previous flirtations around the racetrack, Baines knew she was in particular need of money, and tonight was the night she came out with it in a plain-spoken way, asking him for a significant sum, quote, just to make a car payment. Of course, he had been drinking, but not so much that he didn't hear his cue or deliver his line. So, how much do you need? Her answer hung like a limp flag on a windless day. He waited patiently until he heard what he knew was coming. Do you think you could help me? He smiled when he heard it. No, it wasn't the smile of the predatory crocodile at the plight of some new prey floundering in the river. It was simply the smile of recognition, the universal response to the familiar. All of the love he'd ever received had been just like this. All of the love in his mean life had been just this transactional, a this for a that, the very soul of the Latin phrase quid pro quo. His answer, a question for her question, was, well, what do I get out of this? What do you mean? Asked the girl who feared the worst. What am I going to get if I give you this money? His question was asked in a friendly way, almost as if they were two lovers flirting over who was going to pay for the first movie's popcorn. What do you want? The teenager gamely plodded on. I don't know. Maybe just some pictures of you, I guess. What kind of pictures? Well, how about some topless ones? There, he had said it. It took about 10 seconds at the outside for her to say yes. Really, what was the big deal, she asked herself. She'd already been sexually active more than once, for sure, and more than one boyfriend had asked for and received a few sizzling hot pictures. Everyone did it now and then. The novelty had by now worn off. 10 minutes later, the pictures arrived. Good to his word, he handed her the money the next day. They were square, and, all things considered, this was maybe the fairest trade of all his relationships with the ladies. Rod Baines didn't get to enjoy the pictures he'd paid for in the privacy of his lonely life. He had not forgotten that in the state in which he lived, the age of consent was 16, rather than the age of 18, so common in many other states. Pesky detail was that, although the age of consent for sex was 16, the national age of consent to produce pornography was 18. And so, what Rod Baines had actually received was what is commonly known as child pornography. The judge in the case, who was very familiar with the law that allowed this teenager to have sex, if she wanted to, with anyone of any age, so long as it was consensual, had to be shown the state statute in question. He, like Rod Baines, couldn't believe anyone in the state could have possibly enjoyed consensual sex with her, yet no one in the state could have a picture of her in any state of undress. That included especially pictures designed to appeal to prurient interests. The judge shrugged his shoulders, shook his head, and reluctantly pronounced the defendant guilty. Guilty of having solicited child pornography. Guilty of having received child pornography, and guilty of being in possession of child pornography. For Rod Baines, a life that couldn't have gotten any worse had nevertheless become much worse, much more lonely, and much more dismal as he waited forlornly for his pit crew to show up at Sex Crime Central. Welcome to our debriefing. Our debriefings aren't for everyone. Those who willfully wish to remain ignorant about how people come to make the sexual decisions they do will have to remain satisfied with their own theories. Theories like bad people do bad things. Well, because they're bad. And we all know that they're bad because, although they used to be good, they went on to do bad. But it's good to have you with us as we sort out how people really end up failing to manage their sexuality intelligently. For the rest of us, be cautioned. If we come to really understand the stories of the visitors to Sex Crime Central, we risk remembering that they are human, when it is so much more comfortable, so much more comforting, and so much more mainstream to consider them monsters. As always, here at Sex Crime Central, we share an implicit promise with you that if we can understand these stories, we can then learn to predict sexual problems and the sex crimes that can grow from those problems. With our newfound ability to predict, we can then begin to prevent sexual criminality, not only in our lives, but in the lives of others. For those who haven't joined us in the earlier episodes of Sex Crime Central, please know as we debrief this case that we are not looking to excuse anyone's behavior. Veteran listeners know that understanding how a behavior came about is not the same as excusing that behavior any more than understanding a dreadful epidemic excuses a virus for the harm it does. Sex Crime Central is not so much about entertaining you as it is about giving you an opportunity to train your mind and to make your own inner darkness a conscious part of who you are. At Sex Crime Central, we strive to remain aware of criminal conduct without ever feeling the need to attend to it with the normal shock and disgust. We seek to overcome this overly emotional reaction in favor of an attempt at rational thinking. Why? Well, because sex crimes are so very serious. We promise you that sexual criminality will be understood here at Sex Crime Central, but because no good deed goes unpunished, you and your understanding of sexual criminality will become suspect. Do not be afraid. This is a necessary step. So how did Rod Baines get to where he did? After all, we should examine the mystery here with an open mind because he had no history of criminal behavior. He had no history of sexual deviancy. He, like most of those convicted of sex crimes, was born a perfectly normal baby boy. He had never dreamed of growing up to become a registered sex offender. So how can we explain that this intelligent and very good man could make such a flawed decision that ultimately led to his arrest? Our failure to understand him could ultimately prove to be our failure to understand ourselves. We can understand this. Like so many explanations of bad behavior, we must look at the individual's youth and how they were raised. But wait, did you just hear that? I heard the tisk-tisk noise made by those thinking, here we go. He's going to say it's the parents' fault, or, more likely, the mother's fault. Well, for those invested heavily in the medieval explanation of human behavior that leads to the conclusion that bad people do bad things because they're bad, then this is going to be hard to hear. Such thinking is less about looking for an explanation than it is a search for the guilty. That is, whom can we blame? If the perpetrator of a crime is not to blame, this way of thinking leads us to find someone else to blame. But notice, this is always about blaming. This way of thinking always brings us back to blaming. It's never about understanding, it's never about predicting, and it can never be about preventing. Once we've figured out who to blame, we lean back, fold our hands over our bellies, because aha, our work is done. Another sinner has been found out, exposed to the contempt of unthinking people. So was there anything about Mr. Baines' youth and the boy he once was that could help us understand his tortured path to sexual criminality? Yes, but this might seem a bit tricky, so hang on. Sometimes we need to notice what happened in order to explain a thing, but it is also true that sometimes we need to notice what didn't happen. In Rod Baines' youth, the boy he once was grew up without any real friends. He grew up in a rural setting in the country, and there was no one living nearby him, but even those he knew at school never became his friends. Some think this sort of country background setting is idyllic, but look what didn't happen as he roamed the fields and woods near his house. He never, ever developed the social skills needed to make even platonic friends, and he certainly never developed the intimacy skills that would have prepared him to honorably and legally get his adult needs met in a loving relationship. Think of this in relation to yourself or to your own children. Ours is a social species. We have no choice about this part of who we are. We and the generation we are educating will either be good at socializing or bad at socializing. We will either be competent or inept. Few parents or educators think of these things because, frankly, few of them have the awareness or even the needed skills. Not to be too harsh on religion, but it is clear that the development of social skills and intimacy skills are in no catechism. Despite the fact that every religion claims to teach us how to love, no religion actually makes an effort in that direction. Think about this. What good are doctrines when I have no idea how to make even one friend? What good are doctrines when I have no idea how I could be a real friend to someone else? Schools purport to teach us what we need to know, but what good is my education on any subject if I don't learn how to be a functional human being in my society? And what is the key to human functioning? Socialization. Or, as the poets might say, learning to love and be loved. This is a big deal, and the young Rod Baines never got these lessons. These deficiencies in his youth set up a series of emotional dominoes that fell in a catastrophic sequence of failure. Because no one taught him how to have or how to be a friend, he had no friends. One domino. Because he had no friends, he never learned the basics of socializing or the most basic ways, the non-sexual ways, to solve the problem of loneliness. Another domino. Because he was always lonely, he arrived at adulthood with an adult male sex drive and no coherent strategy that would maximize his chances of finding a loving, satisfying relationship. A third domino. Because Rod Baines was an adult male with an adult male sex drive, but no clue how to plant himself in a good relationship, he landed in a relationship that merely seemed okay. She was, after all, a woman he was attracted to, and, most importantly, she was willing to be seen publicly with him. What more was there to ask? With yet another domino falling, Rod found himself in the loneliest position of all. He was lacking a meaningful connection with another human being, but his marriage and the normal rules of marriage prevented him from doing anything to solve that problem, the problem of chronic loneliness and perpetual neglect from a woman who could really take him or leave him. The two advanced intimacy skills that were missing included Rod's never learning how to conduct an intentional interview to make sure that he was actually building a relationship with someone who was genuinely right for him, or, at the very least, to dramatically raise the odds of that outcome. Let's face it, most people rely on some sort of magical thinking after they fall in love. Oh, we're in love. It'll work out. Or, we love each other. What could possibly go wrong? Or some other version of reliance on miraculous outcomes. Well, we waited until we could find someone we could marry in the Lord. Imagine building a home, a career, or waging a marketing campaign for a new business with this sort of reliance on magical thinking. It would be like handing the keys to an expensive Italian sports car to a teenager who's never had any instruction on how to drive. It'll work out. Somehow. No one does that unless we're talking about adult sexual relationships. What could our community have done to prevent this sex crime? Some people get caught up in a distracting aspect of this discussion in which they say, well, I never had any kind of instruction and I certainly never committed a sex crime. Well, don't lose hope. Not yet, perhaps, but the day is young and there's still time. Consider how many Americans have miserable marriages with this kind of loneliness. And although they may never commit a sex crime, they, and this could be you or even your own children, are merely miserable for a lifetime. No sex crime, just miserable. Not a great outcome. I have read that some Americans actually end up having affairs, a behavior that used to be a crime and a sex crime, and it still is in the military and in other countries. No longer a sex crime, maybe, but think about this. If you could prevent yourself from behaving in this way, if you could prevent yourself from having this sort of misery, if you could prevent yourself from having an affair and yet solve the problem of loneliness, wouldn't you do it? Sure, our communities need to recognize the importance of little boys having friends and learning how to be good friends. We need to teach the sort of social skills that evolve into intimacy skills, including that final intimacy skill, how to honorably terminate relationships that no longer work. Rod Baines never learned that one. Parents, schools, and religion could all be a part of the solution of teaching about friendship and normalizing some sort of in-game strategizing about committed sexual relationships. We don't have to teach more about sex. We have to teach one another what it means to be human. We have to teach one another what it means to have an adult sex drive and how to manage it intelligently. What could Rod Baines have done to protect himself from committing this crime? Well, really, not much. If our society doesn't see a problem, for example, racism, then no one will take steps to bring about healthy change. It's the same with teaching platonic love between friends and the need to manage sexuality intelligently. We assume as a culture that somehow these things will simply just happen, as if by magic. Rod Baines had to commit a sex crime to initiate the community's intervention in his life. A different kind of domino. The community required him to attend professional counseling. Yet another domino leading to solving the problem of intimacy skill deficits. Eventually, Rod did learn how to conduct an intentional interview, and this led him to success in a loving relationship that he still enjoys, a relationship that is beyond his wildest imaginings. Case closed. Around the tracks where he worked, Rod Baines was among the happiest of depressed men. He loved his work. Unfortunately, he hated his life. Alone and lonely, in his misery, he had reached out for a good time that couldn't possibly hurt anyone, in a manner that seemed to him totally legit. He anticipated deliciously sensual relief to both his loneliness and his sexual frustration. He was confident that his choices were legal because he was, after all, alone, a quiet divorcee in his own domicile. After making his connection at Sex Crime Central, Mr. Baines discovered the inadequacy of his thinking about human sexuality in the law. The source of his new viewpoint? That very expensive seat on the grandstand, looking down on the racetrack of sexual ignorance, a place where he became collateral damage in an absurd quirk of the criminal justice system, a system that knew no more than he did about managing sexuality intelligently.
You're listening to Sex Crime Central with psychotherapist Stephen Ng. This has been an Ng Intellectual production with editing by Steve Cooper and original score by Octophonics. Follow Stephen on Twitter at StephenIngMFT or visit StephenIng.com for more information. Don't forget to subscribe to Sex Crime Central and leave us a review with your thoughts on each episode. We'd love to hear from you.